cristiano.
Kolvesky against Deborah Achim.
May it please the court. My name is Maria Baldini Poterman, and I represent Arkady Kolyavsky, the appellant in this case. Mr. Kolyavsky is a 28-year-old Jew who went to the United States as a refugee in 1992. He later became a lawful permanent resident. His parents and brother are naturalized U.S. citizens. Mr. Kolyavsky was subsequently convicted for several misdemeanor offenses, two felony offenses, and placed in removal proceeding as a result of those convictions. He suffers from severe anxiety disorder and depression and has been treated by the same psychiatrist since September 2001. He has been held in immigration custody now for 496 days, since August 26th of 2004. Russia no longer recognizes him as its citizen and has refused to issue travel documents to the Immigration and Customs Enforcement of the Department of Homeland Security to allow it to remove him to Russia. Mr. Kolyavsky filed a petition for writ of habeas corpus challenging the constitutionality of his continued detention.
That was my first question. He was challenging in this proceeding his detention, am I correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
His present detention.
Yes, Your Honor. He is challenging the removal order issued by the Board of Immigration Appeals and another petition for review, which is currently pending before this court. The petition for review is due to be briefed with the opening brief on January 19th of this year. The issue before this court is basically, who is Mr. Kolyavsky's custodian? For purposes of a petition for writ of habeas corpus. The district court held that it was not Deborah Achim, the ICE office field director here in Chicago, but rather the warden of Kenosha County Jail. The government has asserted that it is Lieutenant Schleck, the warden at Kenosha County Detention Center. In related litigation, which is appended to our opening brief, Lieutenant Schleck has averred that it is not him, but rather Sheriff Beth, and that actually Deborah Achim is the one who controls custody of
him. Who represents the lieutenant in that proceeding?
In that proceeding, Your Honor, he's represented by a state's attorney, and also the U.S. Attorney's Office is representing Ms. Achim in that proceeding.
And what position has the United States government taken in that litigation?
In that litigation, Your Honor, they took the position that the lieutenant and David Beth, who is the sheriff of Kenosha County Jail, would be the custodians.
Is there a contractual arrangement between Kenosha County and the federal government?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what does it provide?
It's called an intergovernmental service agreement, and it provides that the Kenosha County Detention Center provide the basic place of housing and medical care and safety for Mr. Kolyavsky. We allege and we assert, Your Honors, that Deborah Achim continues to maintain custody and that she is actually the immediate custodian because she basically controls what the Kenosha County Jail can do as far as services for Mr. Kolyavsky.
But the contract doesn't indicate one way or the other.
I'm sorry.
The contract doesn't provide any information with that regard, because who is the custodian? Yes.
No, Your Honor, we do not have a copy of the contract. We are instead referring to what Lieutenant Schleck has alleged in his response in the Eastern District of Wisconsin. The detention standards, however, which are promulgated by the government, by ICE in this case, do provide that the IGSA facilities cannot move a detainee without permission from the government. They cannot basically transfer him, and that all of the control ultimately resides in the ICE field director.
Well, that means that the ICE field director has the authority to order the continued incarceration or the removal or whatever of the individual, but still, isn't the for purpose of habeas corpus, are we worried about who has the authority to give orders, or are we worried about who actually controls the body and can deliver it to the court?
Your Honor, for purposes of habeas corpus, the concern is both who has control over the body as well as who can produce the body before this court. Deborah Achen is the only individual who is ultimately responsible for producing the body of Mr. Kulyavsky before the habeas court.
So the same general principle apply to a warden of a prison? The warden of a prison is following somebody else's orders. He's not making these decisions himself, is he?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question. I'd like to point out a couple of things. Generally, a warden of a prison is within one state and controls basically the person within its facility, and that person may be transferred for purposes of serving a criminal prison sentence within the state. In this situation, Ms. Achen has control over Mr. Kulyavsky and has transferred him a minimum of 7 times between Illinois and Wisconsin. Thus, between...
Well, one time he was in Dodge County, wasn't he? Which is a different facility in Wisconsin, right?
Yes, Your Honor. It is a different facility in Wisconsin. However, for him to be transferred between Dodge County and Kenosha County, he had to be physically brought down to Broadview, which is located here right outside of Chicago, in order to then be put on a different van and taken up to Kenosha.
Well, I guess it would be your position that when he was in Dodge County, Ms. Achen would be the custodian as well, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Ms. Achen is responsible for approving all medical care for Mr. Kulyavsky, which has been a critical issue in this case. In addition, Your Honor, he has been brought to Chicago on at least 7 occasions for hearings. He was detained in Rivers Edge Hospital here in the Chicago area for about a week and a half at the end of 2004 and beginning of January 2005, again at the direction of Ms. Achen. So he was physically within the custody of this area. The administration uses jails over at this point a two-state area, and a detainee does not know from one day to the next which facility he's going to be physically housed in. Ms. Achen has the ultimate control over where he resides. So he could be brought down from Kenosha County Jail, attend a hearing here in Chicago, then be transferred to Southern Illinois. Again, without any knowledge about where his next place of custody, physical maintainment, will be. Ms. Achen is in complete control over Mr. Kulyavsky, even though she is not physically at the jail running the jail.
And the case law in this circuit pretty well fixed the immediate custodian as being the person who's defending these cases.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, could you...
I say, hasn't the case law in this circuit pretty much settled this question, including Judge Ripple's opinion, that it's the immediate custodian who is to be sued in these situations, right?
Yes, Your Honor, it is the immediate custodian, but we argue that Ms. Achen is actually the immediate custodian, that it is not Lieutenant Schleck or David Beth of Kenosha County Jail. Again, Ms. Achen is the one who actually has day-to-day control over Mr. Kulyavsky's place of confinement, his medical care, his housing, his food. She calls the shots. And it would be a very difficult rule if Ms. Achen is not found to be the custodian for purposes of habeas corpus.
How does that differ from the director of the Bureau of Prisons versus wardens in the federal prison system? Can't the director of the Bureau of Prisons transfer of prisoners from one prison to another, notwithstanding whatever the warden might think?
Yes, I believe he can, Your Honor. But this is...
So how does that differ from the situation you're describing here?
In this situation, Your Honor, Mr. Kulyavsky is being maintained in civil immigration custody. And in the Supreme Court case, Padilla, the Supreme Court specifically left open the issue of who is the immediate custodian for purposes of immigration habeas petitions. It did not decide the issue. The Seventh Circuit has, in its decision, Robledo-Gonzalez, decided that the INS director was and the Attorney General were not the immediate custodians, but that case is completely distinguishable from Mr. Kulyavsky's situation. In Robledo-Gonzalez, that was a 1326 prosecution for an illegal reentry case. And at the time Mr. Robledo had filed his habeas petition, the INS had not even lodged a detainer against Mr. Robledo. In this case, Mr. Kulyavsky was taken into immigration custody at the request of Ms. Achim, and she has maintained the decision-making process over whether he will be released or not.
You see a difference between civil detention and criminal detention, then?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. Mr. Koyaski is held pursuant to a civil immigration law, which he is now challenging the constitutionality of his continued and ongoing detention, for which there appears to be no end. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear now from the governor, Ms. McNulty.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, this morning before you there is one simple rule, and that is, as was referred to here earlier, the habeas statute. The habeas statute simply applied, and simply applied to this particular case, says you should sue the person who's the actual custodian, the person in charge of the jail, the warden as it is in this case, in the particular district of confinement. This is clearly the simplest rule. It's the easiest rule for anybody to follow.
We have to
move.
Please, go
ahead. What's the position you're taking in the Wisconsin case?
Your Honor, we responded to that case in kind. Counsel had filed her petition again anew in Wisconsin. We did not contest jurisdiction there. We filed a substantive brief in response to the habeas petition. So that habeas petition has been responded to. We are not seeking to avoid personal jurisdiction.
You're trying to get that case dismissed on what grounds?
Subject matter jurisdiction, Your Honor, the basis of that was that he was being held according to the law, constitutionally he was being held pursuant to Section 236C of the Immigration Act. He is a convicted criminal, and while his immigration proceedings go forward, we contend that the Attorney General has the power to detain him during the pendency of those proceedings.
I thought there was something wrong with briefs that you were saying that you couldn't pursue that proceeding while this one was ongoing.
The initial argument I believe made by counsel in Wisconsin was if the court did take that tack, that in fact these two courts would be deciding the same issue. However, I don't think the same issue is being addressed in the Wisconsin case. I think that the court there is addressing the merits of the habeas petition. In fact, we seek that this court would actually decide the issue of the proper respondent, and that goes directly to the issue of personal jurisdiction in these cases.
Do you believe your contract has any bearing on this case, that is, an agreement with the various counties as to housing detainees?
Your Honor, as regards this case, I don't believe so. The contractual agreement clearly sets forth the obligations and duties of each detention facility as they are obliged to take care of our individual detainees. We ask them to do that under the contract. I think it further exemplifies the fact that they do exercise the day-to-day care and control of the individual, and that Ms. Achim, who is at least three supervisory levels, maybe more, above the individual who is actually physically taking care of a person every single day, that is the person who knows the detainee, who knows what his needs are. If he has a problem with his detention, he can ask one of the guards to say, I need to talk to the warden, I need to file a habeas lawsuit, I feel that I am in unlawful custody. That, we believe, is the simplest rule, and I don't think the contract that the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency has necessarily bears on who should be sued in this case, other than the fact that the individual warden who actually is housing him and who's actually in charge of him on a day-to-day basis, that should be the proper custodian. And the case should be filed in that district of confinement. That also makes sense in light of the Seventh Circuit's previous decisions and as well as the Supreme Court's decision, which have upheld and have affirmed this habeas statute, which say if you file in a proper district of confinement and you file against the right custodian, then Section 2241, the habeas statute, is strictly adhered to. And the cases can percolate throughout the district if there's an issue that needs to be resolved. You can have cases that are litigated throughout the districts and then go up to the Supreme Court instead of individually, and which would be a waste of, I think, of judicial resources and economy.
In any of these other cases that have been cited here involved, in any of the prison situations like this one, where you have a contract, you use another detention facility.
Are that the cases cited in these briefs?
Has that situation arisen in any of these other cases? cases are cited as precedents?
The other cases, I realize, Your Honor, involve, for example, the Almari case involves an enemy combatant case. That obviously is in Illinois. There was an Illinois case originally where the petitioner detainee sued here in Illinois, and then he was subsequently moved to South Carolina to a naval brig. And he actually tried, obviously, to sue Rumsfeld, and actually that was found not to be the proper custodian because that was a remote supervisory official, obviously. The correct custodian in that case was found to be the...
Well, the naval brig, of course, is owned by the government of the United States. And here we've got a situation where you're using a Wisconsin penal detention facility by your contract. And is there a case that's similar to that?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. At this point in time, the individual detention facilities that are used by the government are sprinkled throughout the area because that's where the availability of space is. So if we use a facility in Kenosha or Dodge County, it's because that's where there's availability of bed space. I would like to address one point brought up by counsel, which is when a habeas petition is filed in this district, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement has a policy that they do not move people from that facility. I personally represent most of the habeas petitions that come before this district, and it is a policy, and there is a direct line of communication between the supervisory officials and all the way down to the actual officer who handles each and every case and is in contact almost weekly, if not more often, with each of these detainees, that they are not removed and put into another facility without our knowledge or without seeking approval from the court or seeking approval from counsel on who represent the detainee. So I think that that is an additional built-in policy that we try to make sure that the person, once you file litigation, that litigation is taken care of and is seen to, that it gets in front of the court as soon as possible. We realize, the government realizes, that habeas relief is very serious. I think Judge Bucklow correctly stated in her opinion that habeas petition attaches not to the person who seeks the relief, but to the person who is allegedly holding that person in unlawful custody. And that makes sense, because if you're arguing that you're being held in custody unlawfully, who do you want to have to hear that? You want the person who's holding you in unlawful custody, that immediate person, to know that. And we believe that that person should be the warden or the custodian of the facility. There's nothing else. I'd ask that the court affirm the decision of the district court. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. McNulty. Ms. Taylor's counsel have. You have 1 minute, Ms. Bodie Parman.
Your Honor, the government has conceded in its briefs that the legal custody resides with Ms. Acheham at this point. Mr. Koyosky requests that this court find that she is also his immediate custodian and reverse the decision of the district court and remand his case for a decision on the merits of his petition. Thank you.
The court thanks both counsel for the very fine oral arguments and written submissions, and the case will be taken under advisement.